Welcome to the Jared and Nolan Show. I'm Jared Cummings.
And I'm Nolan Dixon. And today we will be discussing
fake news and mucho more.
At the pleasantly intellectual height of
above the fray.
Meaning if you are tired of the endless heated debates on nightly news and social media, you can get a breather here while still being challenged and informed about all the things that matter. And you can catch us weekly on Tuesdays. If you have any ideas or things you'd like to hear us discuss, feel free to let us know. Send an email to jared.nolan.show@gmail.com or comment on whatever platform you're on. Thanks for listening. So yeah. Jared, Hey. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you're doing.
Jared Cummings was born and raised in Southern California,
SoCal.
Specifically a small, not-so-sleepy town known as Newberry Park, California. It's where I went to elementary, middle, and high school. And what else you want to know about me?
All right, so you grew up in Newberry, California. In SoCal.
Newberry Park, yeah.
Newberry Park, thank you. And so high school, and then college after high school?
Yep. After high school, I decided to leave the beautiful state of California for arguably something better, the great state of Colorado. My family's been visiting there since I was really young to ski, so I've always loved to ski. And ended up going to Colorado Christian University outside Denver and studied political science, and on Fridays I skied.
Wow, that sounds like a pretty good schedule of classes there.
Yeah, CCU is where it's at as far as college scheduling goes. They really prioritize a culture of balance, life balance. So they want you to work hard and study hard, but also to be involved in extracurricular activities. They don't want people graduating with debt, so they give people time to work. Fridays, you know, being in a mountain state, they want people to go out, so most classes are scheduled in the first 4 days of the week.
Great. No, that's awesome. And you worked on the slopes then?
I wish I worked on the... Well, no, I don't wish I worked on the slopes. I took outdoor leadership classes, and so I did avalanche training, fly fishing, rock climbing, backcountry skiing. So that's when you're skiing without the help of a chairlift. A lot more exhausting, but a lot more fun too. And skied all over the what we call the Front Range. So a lot of big resorts there: Vail, Breckenridge, Winter Park.
All right, very cool. So for listeners out there that want to get a little sneak peek into Jared's mind, what would be, you know, in a sentence or two, how your mind operates, or what you want listeners to know about what's going on upstairs?
How Jared's mind operates? Man, that could be a multi-series podcast episode. But generally, I come from a faith background, so I have a strong sense for right and wrong, morals and values, often termed traditional family values. So I definitely see the world through more of a Christian worldview. On top of that, I am a huge history buff. So I think on my strengths test and all the personality tests, I always get like context and learner. Those always come up because context is everything. When a story is divorced of the full details of what's actually going on in a person's life, you really don't get to the bottom or the truth of the matter. You can get a little 8-second soundbite of a 1-hour speech and you're not going to have the foggiest clue what the person was actually talking about, but the news can use that to make you look pretty bad if you mess something up.
All right, well, that sets the stage wonderfully for our topic today of fake news, but I want to ask you a fun question too. What is the craziest thing you've ever consumed?
So the craziest thing I've ever consumed.
The most exotic food that Jared has eaten.
Ugh. Definitely chicken foot.
All right.
When I studied abroad in China in 2015, one of the rites of passage was having chicken foot. And believe it or not, this is like a delicacy. The Chinese have something like 4,000 dishes. It's a 5,000-year-old civilization. They have tons and tons of different items of food, and they cook everything, and just throw sauce on it. So they're really good at using sauce, because some of the things, like chicken foot, taste absolutely awful, and it's just cartilage and bone, but you're supposed to rip the cartilage off the bone of the chicken foot. You put the whole foot in your mouth.
Okay.
And just... I don't want to gross anybody out, but it's really bad.
So you're chewing the cartilage off the bone.
Attempting to chew the cartilage. I mean, it's like almost rock hard. You're not sure what's cartilage, what's bone, you know. And then you got the toenails in there too.
Oh my!
It's just gross. But they actually like this stuff. They will sell. You know, when you go to your gas stations around here and you get your sunflower seeds and your chips and your candy, they will have packaged chicken foot. Huh. In these convenience stores. So it's something that's very common.
Go figure. And do you spit anything out at the end of that ordeal?
Well, you don't eat the bones. Okay. So, yeah. That does come back out. Okay. But everything else is supposed to go down.
Oh.
Yeah. But enough about me. Tell the audience a little bit about you. Who is Nolan Dixon? Where was he born and raised?
Great. So Nolan Dixon was born in... the heartland. So for those of you that don't use this term regularly, we'll call it the Midwest of the United States of America.
Where the corn lives and grows.
That's right. Where you get your corn and a lot of other agricultural products. I was born in the great state of Iowa, in the capital city of Des Moines, but I was lived and raised in Ames, Iowa, which is a university town a little bit north of Des Moines. And
what's the university in Ames?
Yeah, Iowa State University is the primary one there. One of the big three or four considered in the state. I like to give a shout out to my high school, Ames High School, a very well recognized public school academically. A lot of diversity. Ooh. And
Iowan standards or
by U.S. News.
By U.S. News standards. Okay.
Yeah, Ames High School was a great place for kids to learn and grow and develop. And then I stayed on in town and went to Iowa State University.
Oh, you're a true breed.
Some people like to call it townie. There I studied chemical engineering and Spanish. And
how do those come together? I mean, political science and outdoor leadership is a weird combo too. So maybe you're just a well-rounded guy. But I mean, do you read the chemical formulas in Spanish? Are they different or what?
I've yet to really study engineering in Spanish. To be fair, no. I really like languages. I think that's a great way to connect with people. And I at some point would like to be doing business internationally.
Ooh.
So that's the Spanish language angle. Which is hopefully the first of multiple languages that I will learn.
What else do you want to learn?
I've spent a little bit of time in Latin, what many people will call the dead language, so I can read some in that.
It's your science background.
After Spanish.
You're homo sapiens.
It is very helpful for technical fields, medical fields.
Animals, too. They got all crazy names for...
If you want to know, a scientific name or a flower's name, absolutely. So after Spanish, probably Arabic or potentially Farsi, and then at some point, maybe dabbling in a symbol language, so Mandarin or something else.
So no slouch on the chemical engineering language front here. Pretty smart guy. let me try and stump you with one here. What is the coolest thing you've ever done in your entire life?
All right, so for all of you,
and I hope it's not just passing organic chemistry, although that certainly is an accomplishment.
That could be pretty celebrated. And if I wanted to appeal to the science nerds in us all, I would say something about liquid nitrogen being the coolest thing I've ever done.
You've ever done? Is that like some kind of drug you guys do in the lab?
What the coolest thing I've ever experimented with?
Okay.
Now, I would probably say scuba diving. In the Caribbean.
Ooh.
Scuba diving is such a surreal experience to be obviously underwater breathing But then also just to experience that world around you without some of the sensory inputs you usually get on Earth or on land, like us land lovers in the Midwest.
Land lovers, nice. Yeah, no, scuba diving is definitely not a popular sport in Iowa, but glad you've gotten to experience it. Well, to kind of throw the question that you gave me back on you to give our listeners a better idea of maybe how Nolan's mind ticks, what are some of your major influences and inspirations that inform your worldview?
I would say there's a strong tradition of educators in my family. So the idea of learning from others and then also being able to understand things in a way that you can teach them is been a pretty important part of our family. Beyond that, I would say both of my parents were very strong influences. One's self-employed in the finance area, the other one's a nurse and a teacher of nursing. And their emphasis on being able to learn from others and then also reading. Books have been a great source of pleasure and information for me. So I think really being able to experience different things, put yourself in other people's experiences, and trying to see it from different points of views. You mentioned context. I think those multiple perspectives are so important to getting a fundamental and a true understanding of a variety of topics.
Very cool. Well, on that note, since we're both interested in discerning the truth, I think one of the most challenging trends of our time, and you've got some cool research I know based on Google Trends, is this whole concept of fake news. What is it? Where does it come from? So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So fake news, what is it? And what is news for that matter?
Oh, what is news? Jeez.
So, you know, to have something be fake, you have to know what's real. Fake news is a term that's been thrown around a lot, specifically in the United States, probably in about the last year.
Yeah.
So for those of you that aren't familiar with Google Trends, it's a neat little way that you can ask Google how many times people have been querying it for a certain set of words. And if you type
in a chemical engineering term for search query?
Yes, with a chemical symbol of QU.
Okay. That's good.
And so if you ask Google Trends, you know, about fake news, you'll see a relatively flat line over the last 5 years until you hit October 2016.
Or election season.
About a month, right. A month
Donald
before
Trump.
The elections.
So, some serious news there.
Serious news, serious fake news. And this idea that what you read, what you see in your news outlets, anything from the big established, relied upon
CNN,
traditional
ABC,
news sources.
NBC.
Right.
Fake
those,
news? No.
Those, all the way down to the blogs that are cropping up all around the world. You know, it's asking yourself what's fake and what's real. And this fake news is where someone can make a claim that isn't backed up by facts or they don't offer any facts. And then there's often a counterclaim or other claims that are clearly contradictory. And you're kind of left in this limbo of who to believe. And if the facts aren't being introduced, or if you can't even trust where the facts are being produced, that's a real struggle. And I think to put it, to give it some context, fake news is not new. And contrary to a variety of claims, I don't think it originated with Donald Trump.
What? This has got to be some serious fake news.
Fake news has been around really as long as humans have been communicating with one another.
Now, I want to pause on that. Why has fake news been around that long? You know, since if it's going to be around since the dawn of human time, but, you know, Google Trends shows it's only recent. What is it about the human condition that causes this?
I think it's a lot of it comes from an emotional side.
Okay.
Because all of us have these different perspectives, different lenses that we see the world through.
Mm-hmm.
And so when an event happens, there can be multiple interpretations of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we have an inclination to want to interpret different events the way we see the world. And then when we communicate that to other people, or if other people ask us about something, we have this tendency to want to align them with our worldview. And I think that's where this deceit, this persuasion, you know, there's fine lines between persuading someone, and then, you know, if you travel far enough along that spectrum, I think you enter into that deceit and lying that can take place from this conversation, you and me, all the way up to websites that have millions of viewers every day.
So what are some of these websites that often get characterized as fake news? I know there's the left and right paradigm, but what is a more realistic definition of that? What are the fakest of the fake news sites here?
Yeah, so it's pretty fun if you want to have your laughs to just search some of these blogs or websites that are either parody, satire, or just fake news sites. So as we were talking before the show, The Onion is one of the most popular.
What is The Onion?
Well, The Onion is a site that...
TheOnion.com, if you want to check it out.
Thank you. It's a site, and weigh in on this, Jared, but to me it's a site that makes ridiculous claims seem just possible enough that you get a chuckle out of them, and it's one of those things where you can send them to your friends, and then when they're like, oh, did this happen, you can follow up with a gotcha. Is that fair?
Yeah, so like I just logged on right now. TheOnion.com, it's laid out exactly as you would see any other news site. And what's so hard to tell, I was a victim to this. You said you were a victim to this too.
I wasn't.
When I first started getting interested in following the news and politics, you know, mid-high school, I saw an Onion ad on Facebook. And I clicked it, and I was like... no way, you know, like here's the headline: staffers frantically trying to restore chaos to White House before Trump returns from Asia trip. And the picture is of Halloween candy being dumped everywhere, you know. And it's like, so you would think like somebody, it's around the Halloween season, and so, but that title is like, it, you know, it's realistic. It sounds real. One of the funniest examples was a couple years ago. They did a story saying, world votes that Kim Jong-un is the handsomest man in the world. And the North Korean propaganda machine actually, like their state paper, republished that as evidence, you know, that their supreme leader was a big deal. But it was a completely fake news story.
But yet, here you have a nationally recognized news outlet taking that as truth.
Yeah. I mean, it is North Korea, so maybe not the best example, but it duped you and me to begin with. And
that kind of leads us into the question of how do you decide if news is fake or not? You know, on one level, if it's intentionally satirical or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then on another level, if it's actually true or if it's just someone arguing their worldview without basis or contrary to the facts of the matter.
Totally. And there's, you have another in the show notes, another example of clickbait sites. And we see this on almost every single major news site. You read, you know, Fox News, CNN, New York Times, they all have this where you'll see the main news story and then you like kind of scroll the bottom, you know, the Blaze too.
Yeah.
And then you get all these like pictures of like these celebrities that they're almost like kind of sexually suggestive photos, and it like entices you to click them. And there was like one ad about that apple cider vinegar, the brag, you know, that, oh, if you take this, you'll lose, you know, 100 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of that is like fake news. It's clickbait. It's meant to get you to click on it. But in terms of like, how do you tell? Well, obviously, if you're not familiar with the subject or the topic, it's easy to get duped. So when you're not familiar with what the news is and who the big names in news are, you know, the mainstream, what we call the mainstream media, the big networks, ABC, NBC, MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, more like the mid-level, you know, your local stations. If you're not familiar with what the main news channels are, especially online, you can see an Onion ad and go, oh, that looks legit.
You
and I both did. But then as we became more familiar with it, you start to recognize, no, this is a joke. You know, here's the real article at CNN. Here's the real article at, you know, the Wall Street Journal. And you start to recognize that, oh, that, you know, that's not fully true or it's not true. So here's the example that I think best clarifies. In answer to the question, how do you know what fake news is? The best example I can give is with counterfeit money. Nations have their standard templates and prints for their money, but there are tons of criminal organizations out there that get copies of this. They build their own templates, their own plates, and then they try to duplicate these, basically print money out of thin air. And if you can get it right, you're basically, you know, money in that sense then comes out of your printer. It might not grow on trees, but it comes out of your printer. And we have whole, you know, people at the grocery stores, you'll see them. If you hand them like a $20 or $50 bill, you know, they hold it up to the light to try and check the watermark. Or they have that black light. They might, they mark it because the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Mint use a special kind of paper that if you use that iodine pen, that it will come up a different color if it's not their explicit parchment. And so here's the answer to that is, you know what a fake is because you spent enough time with the real thing that the second your hand touches or you use one of those markers on a fake thing that it becomes obvious. You know, there are professional counterfeiters who with their hands can simply tell whether a bill, a US dollar, is real or fake because they've spent so much time, the feel of that secret formula for their, you know, currency paper, that they can tell when somebody hasn't gotten the formula right trying to copy it.
And that makes a lot of sense because, you know, that has a tactile feel, it's in your hands, it's physical. I think when you translate that to the news and you play with people's realities, I think the scary part is, ultimately, I think humans are optimistic and people want good things to happen or they want new things to happen or they just want the world to be an exciting place. So when
you want to believe that people are good and wholesome and aren't gonna, you know, publish something totally false.
Right. You have an inherent belief that people are going to publish the truth, but also you have this inherent belief of crazy things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at like on a grocery checkout, there's all these tabloids that play on
The Inquirer,
yeah.
People Magazine.
Boy, you're doing better at naming these. But you see,
maybe I've spent too much time looking at these in the checkout aisle. Oh no!
But you see, these magazines also play on that human idea of wanting to know the dirt or wanting to know what's wrong. And I don't know. I think it's difficult when you look at news and you say, well, I should just know fake news when I see it. Sometimes I think that makes people feel restricted, like they'll not be able to be surprised in their life again, or they won't be able to be taken on these wild fantasy stories that can be exciting for us all. You know, that's why people often read or watch movies or do all these different things.
That's true.
But for me, because I was also duped by The Onion, I've been introduced to websites like Snopes.com,
Snopes,
PolitiFact, these different websites that try to help check fake news, try to help fact check other stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been somewhat helpful to me, but to be honest, I've just felt so much more guarded going through, especially online news articles, news sites.
Yeah.
I always have critical reading glasses on now, so to speak. Is that just where we find ourselves in today's age?
I think you've always got to have critical reading glasses on when you're reading the news because the news has become so political. You have entire institutions that, I mean, there's some recent statistics that have come out saying most journalism majors are 80%+ liberal on the left-right political spectrum. And so there's an inherent bias of the journalism industry, I think, towards kind of more left-leaning philosophies and left-leaning beliefs. And, I mean, George Stephanopoulos used to be a Clinton campaign aide, and now he's the head anchor for ABC or CBS, I think. I'm blanking on the exact one. You know, Anderson Cooper, a lot of the donors of the Democratic Party come out of these. Well, a lot of these men and women donate to the Democratic Party. And then Fox News, which recently got banned in the UK because Sean Hannity was too biased.
Oh my.
Which is not surprising. He's definitely a conservative. All that to say is different outlets have political leanings, so you have to read with critical reading glasses. Who do you like to read?
Well, and before I answer that question, I'll just say that journalism talk a lot about conflict of interest and inherent bias. And I think the important thing here is you can't really ever separate the human from their own belief. So even if a journalist is reporting the facts, they might have their own spin on the philosophy that they
tease. Well, it's like you said, two people can see the same thing happen and have two different interpretations.
Yeah. Yeah, as for who I read, the reason I didn't answer that question and the reason you're going to cut this out is because I have very, very bad answers to that. I would say like the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times,
very intelligent.
Morning Consult.
I don't even know what that is.
Cut
this out because you have bad answers. These are great.
I try to read some of the larger newspapers, so Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post. And then I read
such an intellectual, some serious chemical engineering things put out.
Didn't ask me how often I read them or how much. So I read the comics section. Beyond that, I like to subscribe to services that try to curate headlines for the day, which I think can fall into the trap of a 24-hour news cycle if you constantly feel like you need to read all these different stories. But yeah. I like when its focus is on bringing you the most relevant news about a topic, because then I think you get some of that diversity that it can be easy to lose in today's political landscape. Mm-hmm.
So let's boil down this fake news concept. What are some practical things you do when it comes to attempting to find the truth? If you've got some institutions that are more left-leaning, some that are more right-leaning. There's a famous sticker outside my walk to work in black and white, bold lettering. Fox News lies to support its billionaire donors. You know, a lot of that opinion. You know, Fox News is to the right, CNN is to the left. You know, how do you curate that? You talked about Snopes, Fact Check, PolitiFact. Do you just read a diversity or what? What do you do?
I think that's part of the answer, is to make sure you are exposing yourself to different viewpoints. I think that's always going to be healthy and probably to have a couple websites across that landscape, especially if you're very political, you know, along that left to right spectrum, that you can choose a story and check three or four news sites on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think another way to do that is understand your source. So maybe you don't do a personal profile on every journalist that you read. But you understand.
I don't, so that's
that'd be a deal breaker.
Be good to learn.
That would be, yeah, and maybe we can develop that later on.
Where they graduated from, who they voted for.
Yeah, we can do that with LinkedIn and Facebook, right?
That would be interesting.
But like you mentioned, it's important to know who is funding the news organization and also who they're catering to. So ask some of those questions that they introduce in high school English, you know? Who is the audience? Who is the author? And what does that relationship look like? I think another good thing is to always ask the question, what is the author trying to have the reader do? So if they're trying to persuade you to a point, to me that raises more flags on looking into what their political stance is or what their association is. If they're just trying to report on something, then I think it becomes more about the facts. And then you can go to some of these websites we mentioned where you can get your diversity of sources to see if facts line up. Is there anything that you do that you find really helpful?
So there are a couple sites that I probably prefer to reference. I think USA Today is generally pretty solid in their reporting and giving summaries of situations. Not as much op-ed writing that you see on some of the big newspapers, although they do have that section. I did extemporaneous, aka news, speeches in high school on the speech and debate circuit. And the Christian Science Monitor, terrible name, great reporting, does a really good job of taking a story and asking. Almost all their headlines are a question, and then they walk through an answer. to each question, you know. So what does this situation reveal about blank, or what does this mean for, you know, X? And they ask questions and then they provide answers, which I think is actually a really cool way to read about the news, although that can influence your perspective. But getting a diversity of views, if you read the same story on CNN, the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, MSNBC, and Fox News, you'll get different opinions in each, but hopefully a similar restatement of the facts. And that will, I think, enable you to determine whether that event actually happened or how it happened. It's the same as a lot of critics of actually the Bible will read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Those four books are different eyewitness accounts of the resurrection. And Lee Strobel does this recent movie that came out, I think not but a month ago, The Case for Christ, where it's kind of about his, as an investigative journalist, the way he read through those books, looking at the four different accounts of Jesus's story and whether they corroborate or not. You know, there's another guy, Cold Case Christianity, a book. I had just been reading these over the summer, which is why they're coming to mind. Yeah. As you can have four different eyewitnesses, four different interpretations of the same event, but certain facts will remain true in all, and that's how you can truly tell whether the source is genuine or not. Something to keep in mind.
And so, I think that goes to show that this fake news phenomenon is not just a news or just a journalism issue. Mm-mm. It's really across all aspects of life. How do you interpret daily events, historical events, current new or current events? How do you interpret them, and how do you communicate that with other people?
Yeah. So let's take this down to a real world scenario and talk about the news story of the week. Some mucho more with Roy Moore.
Mucho more. So, Jared, you got to bring me up to speed on Roy Moore, because sometimes I like living under a rock.
Yeah. So, Roy Moore, if you haven't heard of him, he is a lawyer who was previously the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. Alabama has elections for their Supreme Court. They're not necessarily appointed. Yeah. Some states actually do elections. Some just have appointees. He ran, got elected, and he's a fairly controversial figure in the national media. So let me run through his background here. This is his biography by the Alabama Supreme Court website. He graduated from West Point in 1969, served in the U.S. Army, got his JD degree from the University of Alabama School of Law, was a district attorney in Etowah County, did some private practice, became Chief Justice, or the 16th, a judge of the 16th Judicial Circuit in 1992, then Chief Justice in 2000. That's what he's mainly known for. And he becomes known for that because in 2003, he put up a Ten Commandments monument at the Supreme Court building, and then refused to take it down when he got sued, and actually was forced to take leave from his position. Yet he ran again in 2012, it looks like, or thereafter. But then was removed again from his seat when he didn't enforce the Obergefell v. Hodges, the legalization of gay marriage decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. That's a really brief of, he's now 70, of his 70 years. Basically a lawyer dude from Alabama, good old Southern boy, prioritizing his Ten Commandments and sticking up for quote-unquote traditional family values. Now, since he's been removed from the Chief Justice seat, he's running for the open Senate seat in Alabama. The previous senator there, Attorney General, now Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, right, appointed by the Trump campaign to that position. That seat is empty. He abdicated it when he got the new position. And so there's a special election, which is why we're still hearing about this, even though everybody voted, you know, on November 7th. This election actually takes place mid-December. So we're going to be hearing about this for
the next several weeks.
But the reason it's a big deal in light of all the news that's come out of Harvey Weinstein and his scandals, is Roy Moore has a scandal of his own. Four women in a Washington Post expose accused him of sexual harassment and sexual assault, and this being at a time when they were teenagers and he was in his mid-30s. So a big gap there in terms of their relationship.
I think Roy, the ages thrown out were something like 14, 16, 17 for the girls, and he was in his young 30s. Is that right?
Yes, he was in his young 30s, and these girls, one of them as young as 14. So let's get some background on this. Roy Moore has actually denied these allegations, and this is what he had to say in an interview.
What do you make of these allegations?
Well, Sean, first let me say this. These allegations are completely false and misleading. But more than that...
So completely denied them, saying they're false and misleading. But the more serious allegation came from the 14-year-old, Miss Korfman.
With this young woman who was 14, Lee Korfman, and her mother says that you offered to watch the girl while the mother went inside for a custody hearing, which they confirmed it actually happened at that time. What is your, do you know Miss Korfman? Do you know the mother?
I don't know Miss Korfman from anybody. I've never talked to her, never had any contact with her. Allegations of sexual misconduct with her are completely false. I believe they're politically motivated. I believe they're brought only to stop a very successful campaign, and that's what they're...
So he's arguing that these are false allegations, politically motivated, doesn't even recognize Korfman. But what's interesting is he does recognize the other girls mentioned.
Or anything with regard to the other girls. You understand this is 40 years ago, and after my return from the military, I dated a lot of young ladies. I do recognize, however, the names of two of these young ladies, Debbie Wesson and Gloria Thacker, which they have a maiden, that's their maiden name.
Well, let me...
Sean Hannity pressed on about this, you know, because he remembered too. Well, what about the others?
For going on a date with her, she said that you asked her out on the first of several dates, but nothing progressed beyond kissing.
I don't remember specific dates. No, I do not. And I don't remember if it was that time or later, but I do not remember that. No.
But you know her, but you never dated her ever. Is that what you're saying?
Know her, but I don't remember going out on dates. I knew her as a friend. If we did go out on dates, then we did, but I do not remember that.
What about Gloria Thacker?
So he doesn't remember that his testimony here starts to change, because Sean Hannity brings it back to Miss Korfman and some of the others, and he doesn't remember. So Sean, I think, does a good job actually and says, okay, so if you don't remember some, let's just say in general, did you happen to date younger girls? And this is where Korfman's testimony changes. Or not Korfman.
I remember her as a good girl.
More.
I had some sort of knowledge of her parents or mother, very in particular.
At that time in your life, let me ask you this. You do remember these girls. Would it be unusual for you as a 32-year-old guy to have dated a woman as young as 17? That'd be a, 15-year difference, or a girl 18. Do you remember dating girls that young at that time?
Not generally, no.
So his testimony changes over the course of the interview, going from completely false and misleading to not generally, no. You can catch the full length, the full 15-minute interview online. Just search it on YouTube. But for the purpose of this discussion, is this fake news? You know, are these allegations? A fifth woman recently came out accusing him of sexual assault, adding, you know, now there's five women having accused him. Roy Moore denied it, then kind of walked it back, says they're politically motivated. I mean, CNN and others have, you know, and well, a lot of establishment Republicans, Mitch McConnell, Susan Collins have said on Twitter that Moore should withdraw from the campaign, should give up, that he's not fit to serve for office. So that's kind of a long backstory, but it's I want to try and be true to the story, present both sides here, what Moore had to say, what others have said. Is this fake news?
And as you mentioned, that was a long lead-in, so we'll kind of maybe categorize them in two different areas. Is this fake news? Because we have she or multiple she's said versus he said. And then we have kind of that next question of, you know, should this man, withdraw from an elected office race, from an elected office campaign? So, you know, on one hand, is it fake news? And then, you know, whether it is or not may inform the next question of, is it reasonable for him to still run for office?
Yeah. So I think the reason I asked the question fake news is because there's been a lot of reporting on this issue where sources that are usually on the left have said he definitely should withdraw from the race, even those from the right. And then there have been others, notably those more in favor of Moore, who have said, no, these allegations are totally false. This is what John Oliver, noted comedian, last week tonight, had to say about the situation.
And just this week, we saw some of these techniques pushed to the absolute limit by the scandal involving Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore, who has denied allegations of sexual misconduct with a 14-year-old when he was 32 and called them fake news. Now, watch Sean Hannity then use whataboutism to derail a discussion about it.
This 14-year-old girl, purportedly, according to the Washington Post, told two of her girlfriends what happened.
Here's a tough question.
In real time.
Do you think Bill Clinton, in retrospect, was a predator?
So this is the situation. Sean is favorable towards Moore. Oliver, being more liberal-leaning, is not. And Sean's defending Moore by turning the light, what John calls whataboutism, meaning, okay, instead of answering your question, what about this?
Right.
Turning it back to Bill Clinton. I think this is why it's so hard to weigh this situation, is because we have examples throughout history of moral and ethical standards that we would say, you know, like not dating somebody who's in their teens when you're 32, sexual harassment being bad. A generalization of the situation, that situation is wrong. Whether or not it happened, if it did, that's wrong. How do you interpret that? It seems to get, when it goes to the media, it goes left or it goes right, whether you're in favor or opposed.
Yeah, and it's difficult, I think, to watch the media seem to focus on political stances and political outcomes rather than separating, you know, what did happen, who are they responsible, and then, okay, now that we had that conversation, let's have the other one.
Mm-hmm.
We're not here to say whether or not Roy Moore did or did not sexually harass these women. And I think that's...
But ask a different question in terms of what is the standard.
Right, because that whataboutism, you have someone turning around and saying, whoa, you know, this person today is so bad, you say, but what about this person 20 years ago or 100 years ago that may or may not have been let off the hook differently or kept on the hook differently? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as you mentioned before the show, it's so difficult when people start introducing these whataboutisms, then sometimes the standard just gets eroded. And then you just have the media consumers, which is most of us, left with this, well, shoot, I can't hold this person accountable because this other person wasn't held accountable or was held accountable differently. And so now there's no way to hold a person accountable and have an action forward
without it becoming political.
Right, without becoming political, being called a contradictionist or double standards, all these things.
Yeah, very difficult. I think a standard should be raised across all, you know, all political posts that this kind of... And business posts, this is, you know, no different from the Hollywood stuff we're seeing, that this is not okay. I think most people can agree that this is not an okay situation.
Right. Using your power or using your age or maturity, whatever, using your resources to take sexual advantage of another person is not okay.
Yeah. So keeping on that level, in general, do you think somebody, this is a little bit different from Sean Hannity pointing to Bill Clinton, because that happened in office. This is something that happened 40 years ago. We don't know if it's still going on or not. We haven't gotten any reports. But if somebody has, you know, committed this type of an illegal act or something that is, you know, morally apprehensible, should they be invalidated from running for office? Does their personal character, is that required for service in office?
That's a really sticky question, because now we're asking, you know, at what point does the personal action influence your professional life and your professional capacity to produce? So whether that is for a business or whether that is for your country, and are those things different? You know, if you want to put it differently, should any soldier that's committed a wrong in their life, you know, they're also serving the country, albeit in a very different capacity, and I think their reputation is different too, but the same concept of, you know, should they be invited to, allowed to continue forward producing while they can't do that?
All right, so Jared's computer shut down. I forgot my power cord. We are recording this offsite at the moment, so we're gonna bring things back to that question, trying to answer whether or not personal ethics and somebody's the actions in their personal life should validate their run for political office or invalidate if their morals or ethics are bad.
My short answer, Jared, is no. I think it's important to understand the person that you're electing to office, but I don't think any single action or even series of actions should inherently, by rule or law, take you off of a ballot. Why? I think we're all human. I think everyone has transgressions of their own to varying levels of severity. And I think that all humans have that capacity to change. So do I think this story is relevant? Absolutely. Do I think that voters need to reconsider in light of this recent news? Yes. But do I think he should withdraw from his race? No. If he still believes that he is a capable candidate, and if he wants to ascribe to this office, I think he should owe it to the voters to describe the situation from his standpoint. I think, in my mind, he should own up and be held accountable for that. Yeah. But I think and I think if he fails to own up and be accountable to what voters want him to be, I think that should influence their decision to vote. But no, I would like to see people of all walks of life being able to make themselves anew, whatever that means. You've heard this from me before. I was recently introduced to the fact that Martin Luther King did not have a healthy marriage, in the sense that he had multiple mistresses. And I don't know much about the subject, but that's a moment where I realized, wow.
A big figure, a hero that we look to in history who had this similar moral failings.
Yes. And does that change how I think about him? Yes. Does that take away what he can or can't do professionally? Not necessarily. Does that mean I think Roy Moore is the next MLK Jr. and he's doing those types of things in Alabama? No. But I think he has the ability to be a person outside.
To rise above the sins of his past or the moral failings of his past.
Yeah.
I would certainly agree with that. George Washington, in his farewell address, said, "Of all the habits and dispositions which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars." I do agree with Washington that morals, good morals, lead to political prosperity. And likewise, as we see in this situation, that bad ethics, bad morals, sins lead to not a prosperous political life. The American populace throughout time has punished, and that popularity, elections, whatnot, that people who are not behaving well will receive public outcry, public outlash, you know, won't vote, won't get reelected. But I still believe that even our own failings don't necessarily define who we are forever. You know, I believe that if these things actually happen for Roy Moore, that he ought to apologize, he ought to own them, he ought to try and mend the brokenness and with these women. I would respect that honesty. Some people would take that as an admonition, and therefore his political career would be screwed. I think that's the same reason why Bill Clinton initially denied the scandal with Monica Lewinsky.
Because they assume that by accepting it, they're starting this walk of shame or retreat.
Mm-hmm. And I think it would be good for that honesty, instead of it immediately being, ha, you know, as a gotcha, you know, as if you're, you know, perjuring yourself or, you know, incriminating yourself, you know, like giving a testimony, you know, you can't do this in court, you can't like testify against yourself type thing. Mm-hmm. I think that those types of bad situations in your past don't need to stick with you forever and be your defining legacy. We don't define Martin Luther King by the mistresses. We define him by the advances he had in the civil rights movement. So, long answer short, I don't think he should withdraw, but I think if he does profess to be a conservative Christian and to have a high regard for the truth, that he should own up to what's happened here.
I think that's a good recap. And to kind of recap the questions we asked were, you know, is this fake news? We don't know. Really, the truth lies in the minds of what now six individuals, Roy Moore himself, of course, and then the five women, and potentially more if they come to light. But
I do want to add in here, based on the investigative work that the journalists for the Washington Post did, getting pictures of the yearbooks, contacting the women's friends, you know, multiple eyewitnesses to this story that, yes, the 14-year-old was seeing an older man, that man being identified as Moore, that it would definitely, these testimonies, I would, based on the reporting, would tend to think that they are true or partially true. So I don't think it's totally fake news, but it definitely is politically motivated.
Sure. And as to whether or not that should affect someone's run for political office, that absolutely their personal lives should be part of that conversation when you go to pledge your vote, but it shouldn't be the only part of the conversation, and events in our past shouldn't tell the complete truth for the future.
Yeah, you aren't defined by your past, and the future is unwritten. So this has been the Jared and Nolan Show. We're so glad and thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed our discussion, the questions we raised, the depth of discussion that we've had about fake news and mucho more.
That's right. And we'll be back with you next week, continuing to keep discussion above the fray.